not diminishing them, just moving them over in the passenger seat. And putting what in the driver's seat? Your empathy, tact, and trust. Trust in an outcome that serves the higher good for all involved. We're not saying you can't be right and believe you're right. We're saying don't hold on to that being rightness with a white-knuckle grip. The problem with holding on to being right is twofold. First, having a focus on the rightness of your own position may put up an effective barrier between you and the other person and prevent you from truly hearing them or empathizing with their perspective, which in turn can provoke resistance in the other person and diminish the chances of their being open to your right position. And second, it may keep you from gaining new insight from what the other person is saying that could potentially shift your thinking. Not necessarily make your position wrong, but add to it or enlarge it in some way. Focusing on your rightness can, in other words, prevent you from learning and growing. And it will almost certainly keep you from achieving the kind of harmonious concord that the strongest agreements, partnerships, and collaborations are made of. As Indira Gandhi famously said, "You can't shake hands with a clenched fist."
The judge's natural negotiation system consists of 5 clauses. The coach's winning strategy comprises 5 secrets. Is that simply a convenient storytelling device, or is there another reason for that?
We can't say for sure, but we suspect that both Celia and George Henshaw learned their principles of influence from Pindar, directly or indirectly, and we already know how Pindar loves to think in fives. We've described the 5 laws of stratospheric success in The Go-Giver as forefingers and thumb. Trying to implement the first 4 principles without practicing the 5th, as we put it there, is like trying to use a tool with just your fingers and no thumb. Try it sometime with a hammer, pen, or needle and thread. The same can be said for Ben's 5 keys to legendary leadership in The Go-Giver Leader, and to the 5 secrets of genuine influence here. The thumb in The Go-Giver is the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. In The Go-Giver Leader, it's practice giving leadership as opposed to taking leadership. Here, it is let go of having to be right.
Where did the name Angels Clothed in Fur come from?
First, it's how we both view the animals in our lives. Sweet, sweet creatures, as Mrs. B, a.k.a. Aunt L, puts it. But it wasn't easy finding the right name for Jackson's business. We tried quite a few. Nothing seemed to fit. Then, while we were in the midst of writing our first draft, a friend, Dondi Scumaci, posted a piece about having just lost her dog of many years. John, whose sweet, noble dog Ben was just starting to reach the final pages of his own story, wrote her a note of condolence, talking about how wonderful these little companions are, then added, "Angels disguised in fur." She wrote back, "You are right. Angels disguised and on assignment." Angels clothed in fur, it was. Jackson's business is, of course, fictional. Still, John and his wife Anna do cook their dog's food in their kitchen, using only the purest, only the freshest, only the best ingredients. And I know John and Anna think it's the best dog food in the world. Ben and Toby both just said, woof.
Does the name Smith and Banks have special meaning, like Clazon Hill and Allen and Augustine?
The short answer is, no, but that was on purpose. Actually, we tried out dozens of pet-related names first. But of all the candidates we came up with, from Pets, Inc., Pet World, and Pet Planet, to Pets R Us, Petagonia, and You Pet Your Life, were all in use by real businesses. We discovered that there are approximately 1 billion ingenious pet-related store names out there. People do love their animals. So, we rethought the whole proposition. In The Go-Giver, Joe's company, Clazon Hill Trust Corporation, was named after George Clazon, the richest man in Babylon, and Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. In The Go-Giver Leader, the chairmaker Allen and Augustine was named for James Allen, As a Man Thinketh, and Augustine Og Mandino, the greatest salesman in the world. In this story, though, we realized we didn't want to paint Jillian's company as an especially inspiring place, even though there are lovely people who work there, like Jillian and Maribel. So we sought to make the name as generic and faceless as possible. Thus, Smith and Banks was born.
You wrote once that the Pindar character in The Go-Giver was loosely based on Bob Proctor. Are there any individual characters in this story based on real people?
Yes, at least one. Bo's cat, Cleocatra, who was actually an amalgam of two real-life cats. Years ago, Bob befriended a stray cat, to whom he gave the name Liberty. Jillian's lengthy courtship of Cleo, described in Chapter 9, is an accurate account of Bob and Liberty's delicately cautious introduction. Bob later wrote a blog post titled Lessons from Liberty the Cat about the importance of leaving the back door open, and it became his most popular post ever. Liberty lived with Bob for the rest of her feline days. When John was very young, 5 or so, a starved, terrified stray cat, a Russian blue, appeared in his neighborhood. Adopted by John's family and given the name Chiquita, she did in fact become John's constant companion, just as with Cleo and young Bo. The account of Cleo sleeping on Bo's bed happened exactly as described here, complete with the cat-licked spiky hair every morning.
It was fun to see Rachel's famous coffee making an appearance. Are there other elements from earlier books?
It is wonderful to see how far Rachel's famous coffee has come since its founding 10 years ago, isn't it? And you might recognize those beautiful black and white photos on the wall there. They made their first appearance in the last chapter of The Go-Giver. 2 other previous businesses show up here, too. You may have guessed that the incredibly comfortable chair in the coach's office is custom-made at Allen and Augustine from The Go-Giver Leader, referred to here as the big furniture place down on Dale Drive that sits next door to Aunt Elle's breakfast kitchen. And yes, Dale Drive is a nod to Dale Carnegie. And we couldn't leave the story without paying a brief visit to Iafrate's Cafe, where so much happened in both previous stories. The elephant statue that Pindar commissioned for the park in the middle of the city also found its way into this story. As a metaphor of human interaction, that ancient story just seems to get better and better with age. Aunt Elle herself, of course, is making her second appearance. She was the mentor of the Go-Giver Leader. And Pindar, the chairman who started it all, is once again there in the background. Perhaps, one of these days, we'll get to see him in person again.
Why is it that Solomon sometimes says, woof, and at other times says nothing?
What a great question. In the course of the story, Solomon says woof exactly 5 times. As to why he chooses to speak up in those moments and not others, here is a clue. Look at the last significant statement that Jackson says, or thinks, just prior to the Solomonic pronouncement. Can dogs read minds? Do they have the wisdom of ancient kings? You tell us.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Go-Giver Influencer, a little story about a most persuasive idea, by Bob Berg and John David Mann. This program was directed by Kathy Thornburn, executive producer Diane McKiernan. Text, copyright 2018, by Bob Berg and John David Mann. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.